The dictionary defines hero as Hornsby. Lance, middle name Hornsby, was born sometime before 2010 and died sometime around 2020. In the words of Elton John, now he belongs to heaven, and the stars spell out his name. He welcomed us to the Commonwealth, and we welcomed him into our hearts. He was a man of many interests. Waistcoats, plaid, fine wine, coins. Well, one coin. I don't know if it was more than one, probably just the one. Opium farming, MILFs, cars, and power. From the son of a chauffeur to the two-face of the Commonwealth, he will be missed. He was taken too soon, locked in a cell and forced to feed his colleague to Pamela's rotter son. He would have done anything for Pam, and he did do that. He was a dramatic little bitch, but he was our dramatic little bitch. It is hard to know what to say at a time like this. Let us not be sad because he is gone. Let us be happy that we knew him. And in the words of Dolly Parton, I will always love you, Lance. I will be forever horny for Hornsby. Thank you.
That was beautiful. And I thank you so much. And I just want to say, in honor of Lance, who always did appreciate some good old-fashioned capitalism, here's an advertisement.
It's what he would have wanted.
More importantly, there's something I wanted to ask you. What comes after?
After what?
The unrest of the Commonwealth. Let's say Pamela doesn't survive it. That's going to open up a power vacuum. And when that happens, well, I just look at history. The people who suffer the most in revolutions are the civilians.
What is your point?
You and your people will hold 50,000 lives in your hands.
Until I find my people, there is no after.
You'll find them. I know you. And then you'll have a choice to make. Will you let the Commonwealth burn?
It's not my problem.
Sure. Yeah, you want to leave all this behind you, right? I get it. Me too. But what about the kids? Are you really going to deny them their only chance, the kind of life you took for granted? Doesn't the next generation deserve better than the one before? Otherwise, what's the point?
Hey, Zed Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
It's sad. The instant reaction, people were asking if there was a suicide watch. I'm sorry I didn't call you. We have this rule about not talking before, but you're here, so.
I am here, and it's been hard, you know. It's been a hard week. Hard few days.
Hard couple of days. Well, I just want to mention that this is episode 485. I just thought I should put that out there.
Yeah. And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, season 11, episode 20. What's been lost?
We know what's been lost.
We know what's been lost.
It's Lance.
It's Lance. Why?
Devastated. I just want to mention that as we come down to the last few episodes, we're getting a lot more feedback, which is awesome and expected. And we decided that for the next few weeks, rather than try to fit it all in, and also I have less time to get it ready, that we're going to take a cue from Chris and Jason over on the Talking Dead podcast. Woo! And do a feedback-centered show later in the week, a separate show. So look forward to that sometime in the next few days. I think we're recording on Thursday, so it'll probably be out Friday. Well, maybe we'll do some extra news if anything comes up between now and then, and maybe some comic talk in there, possibly.
Sounds good. I like that.
Cool. All right, so now it's The Walking Dead Season 11, Episode 20, What's Been Lost. Why did they have to do this to us right before the end of the show? God, so mean.
A lot of stuff just doesn't make sense to me now, given what we've been through. You know, I mean, we lost the Queen already this year, and if anything, I would say Lance held an even more special place in the nation's heart.
I know how much you were fretting over the Queen, so yeah, that's...
And now Lance... He deserves, you know, all the pomp and circumstance we gave the Queen, but no one's talking about it. It's very, very hurtful.
If we were there, we would be holding up some candles.
We would be. For sure. Peter was like, "Do you think Josh is going to listen to this episode?" I'm like, "I bet he does." I hope so. I hope he knows. Hi, Josh.
We love you.
We miss you. Come back.
We miss you. Come back. Oh, it's no fair. Oh, what about the Lance spinoff?
I know. Maybe he'll get a Tales. A Tales would be good.
That would be amazing. Mm-hmm. There's a, if that show continues on, mm-hmm. I have my doubts. But there's a great interview with Josh Hamilton in Entertainment Weekly this week. So we'll read that in the news segment.
Yeah, who would have known that my Google alert for Lance Hornsby's groin would actually work? So we'll talk about that later.
That's interesting. All right. Well, what did you think of this episode?
Yeah, good. Horrible, you know, upsetting on a fundamental level, but it was my lineup. But no, it was good. I'm getting a bit worried about the pacing. It feels like we're running out of road, and I'm like,
yeah,
where are we going? What's happening?
But I started to feel that a little bit too, yeah.
I think it might just be anxiety knowing that we're coming so close to the end. But
Four episodes. Yeah.
Four episodes. So, yeah, a lot of feelings. But no, I liked it well enough. Not my favorite of this bunch, but not my least favorite. Like, just solid for mm-hmm. me.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't my favorite, but I'm loving these episodes. So mm-hmm. this was... one of my favorites of season 11, which is a long ass season. So even though I feel like have been pretty great, but I like this one quite a lot. It's actually, I think until about halfway through, I was having the similar feelings as you, like, come on, let's get things going. Mm-hmm. But then a lot happened in the end.
Yes.
And really pointed to some more movement next week, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I still am kind of feeling that way. Like, four more episodes. I don't know what they could be doing right now that would have us not feeling that way.
Right. That's the thing, anyway. Is I'm like, what do I actually want? Like, that's what I mean, for Lance not to be dead. But, like, aside from that, what do I actually other than want? That, but also, right. like, it makes sense that he went at this point. I think this is the point where I'm starting to feel mm-hmm. like I wish there had been a season 12. I don't really, because I think it's good that the show is ending on its own terms. Yeah. But there is part of me that is like,
the denial phase.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten to acceptance.
If we just had that, you know, a full season without Leah and the Reapers and just focused on this, you know, it'd be great. But no, I'll be back in depression next week. So.
Okay, what about your first point?
A kind of short one, but I thought it was really cool, is Lance asks Carol what comes after. And if you read the comics, or if you watch the show, that's a phrase that's quite loaded with meaning, because what comes after was the name given to volume 18 of the comics, which is issues 103 to 108, which is just after Glenn's death and when we're deep in the kind of Negan regime for the first time in the comics. And then in the show, what comes after was the name of season 9, episode 5, which is when Rick left. So it was mm-hmm. interesting to me that they put those words in there, because to me that's, for a Walking Dead audience, that's a real Easter egg / call out.
It's also the question that I, and this is what it's in reference to in this episode, I won't go deep into it because it's your point, but it's the question that I've been asking, that we've both been asking.
Yeah.
Like, okay, if you're going to start a revolution, mm-hmm. you need to think about what comes after.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what's interesting is, like, we'll occasionally bring things up on the show that then get answered the week after. And this was kind of one of them where we've been like, but no one's thinking about what comes after. And I think what's interesting is, although Lance is kind of just chatting to save his own skin and figure out his next move, his points are valid. Like, he's actually giving Carol something to think about. He's like, well, there is going to be a power vacuum, and what are you going to do? And you're going to hold a lot of lives in your hands. You have a choice to make. Will you let the Commonwealth burn?
And she's like, it's not my problem. And that's, I mean, Carol's not the main person who has been instigating this revolution. I would say that's more Max and Eugene and Connie. Mm-hmm. Carol's been a bit on the periphery, but still, she's a part of it. And to just be like, I don't care, it's irresponsible.
Carol's also shit at thinking about what comes after. Like, I would say that's one of the fundamental flaws in her character. She acts impulsively, and sometimes it works really, really well. Like the montage at the start where we saw Terminus, that's like Carol's Rambo moment. It's so good. But with things like killing Karen and David, although she was arguably thinking about the survival of the group, I don't think she always thinks about the long term of what she does. I don't think anyone in this society, this group that we've been following, has had the luxury of really doing that in a while. So for Lance to turn around and say, like, you do have to make this choice, what is going to happen after this? I think that's really, it's actually quite a lucid point, and it shows why, I don't know, Lance and Pamela are in the places they are in the Commonwealth when the group arrive, and why our group have maybe not, I don't know, they just haven't had that kind of thing to think about for a long time. So to me, that was just a very interesting piece of dialogue that I think is really going to shape the next four episodes. Because, yeah, usually when they go in and fuck up a community, it's only like a handful of people, usually, because it happens quite a lot. But we're talking 50,000. That's huge. That's a lot.
And And it was inevitable that something was going to need to come after. If you know, of course, the community is going to be fucked. That's what always happens. So,
yeah, exactly.
So something is going to need to come after. But it's still a good point that Lance is making, that you need to think about that if you're going to come in. And like he said, the children.
Yeah.
What if you don't have a plan and suddenly they're just have gone from going to school and having a safe, secure life, and now they're just stuck fending for themselves in the zombie apocalypse because you didn't think it through.
Right. And I think it links to another thing that Carol kind of throws back at him, where he's talking about the train, and she, like, he says, you know, it's a way to keep things connected to communities. And she says, kind of like Oprah style, like, were you silent or were you silenced? And she's like, do you mean connected or conquering? And that's a distinction, isn't it? You can be connected, but are you conquering when you go to these places on the train, you know?
And I think Lance has always had a desire for power and influence.
Yep.
But it's, I do believe it's in service of creating this community where people feel good to be a part of it. I think anyway, it's not 100%, but it's complicated, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's how politicians are. Even my favorite politicians who I agree with their positions and I support them, I know that they're probably somewhat narcissistic and egotistical, and you kind of have to be to get into a position like that. But we need people in positions of power like that who can try to do things that will help the most people. And okay, maybe Lance, we can talk about whether Lance is the best person for that. Definitely he's done some really bad things, and I'm not gonna sit here and say and criticize Negan and then say Lance is the best, but he has a few points.
He has a few points, and there's a few things that Lance hasn't done that if he had done, I would not be writing a eulogy for him. But yeah, I think it's interesting to look at. And I think Lance's big downfall is he's resentful. Like, he wants recognition and for his mum to pat him on the head and say he's fantastic, and he never gets that. And if that's the reason you're doing the things you're doing, you're never going to be satisfied, because society isn't going to thank you for them. When have we ever thanked a politician for, you know, they're all fallible. Yeah. They all fuck up. Like, ultimately, it's just the scale of the fuck up and whether or not it affects you that matters in the end to the individual, I guess.
That said, please go and leave us some nice reviews on Apple Podcasts, everyone.
Yeah, please do. Please do. Please say that we're good. It will make us so happy.
Finally,
a good review. I just thought that was quite a the conversation to me was a very powerful one, even though it was brief. And you could see that it bothered Carol, I think, because she, I mean, he's yammering away like, you know, I don't know, when you're at a family event and you have to hang out with your weird cousin who you've not seen in ages and they won't shut up. And you're like, oh my God, who is this person? Why am I talking to you?
Oh yeah. Every time he talked, I was like, you're going to get killed.
I was like, she's going to kill you like immediately. So shut up. But you could tell some of the things were landing. And that was one of the ones where you sort of saw her go, oh yeah, shit. Yeah. Oh, shut up, but also, oh no. Yeah. Huh.
See, I didn't get that. Now you're making me want to go through and watch a little closer, because I'm also influenced by watching the behind the scenes thing at the end where Angela Kang said, yeah, Carol pretty much just thinks he's full of shit. But that's what it seemed like to me, that she just wasn't letting, she's just like, he's just trying to get something that he wants. He clearly wants to be in power, so I can't believe anything he's saying to, in service of that. La la la, not listening to you. But if some of it did land, I mean, it should land, you'd think.
Yeah, it's kind I thought of common that sense. Of all of them, it kind of rankled. I think she was like, oh, yeah, maybe.
Okay.
So yeah, that was my number one, was kind of what comes after this whole thing. I mean, both in terms of the show, but also in terms of like the group and the bigger picture.
Yeah, my number one is also what comes after. And I'm going to read what he said. He said, there's something I wanted to ask you. What comes after? After what? The unrest in the Commonwealth. Let's say Pamela doesn't survive it. That's going to open up a power vacuum. And when that happens, we'll just look at history. The people who suffer the most in revolutions are the civilians. You and your people will hold 50,000 lives in your hands. And then you'll have a choice to make. Will you let the Commonwealth burn? That's not my problem. Sure, yeah, you want to leave all this behind you, but what about the kids? Are you really going to deny them their only chance for the kind of life we took for granted? Mm-hmm. Doesn't the next generation deserve better than the one before? Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, these are questions that we ask about our own society, our own country.
Do
we have a responsibility to try to keep things so that they can be preserved?
I mean, speaking as someone who's on their third prime minister in as many months, yes, these are questions that often get asked and don't get bloody answered. So
answered satisfactorily. And it's immoral not to ask the question, I think.
Oh yeah.
If you're one of the ones, you know, involved, especially in a revolution. And later Carol finds out there's a train, and he says it was part of a plan, as you mentioned, a vision to expand the Commonwealth's reach, connecting communities like yours all the way to the sea. Connecting or conquering? I mean, I think it's not one or the other, it's a little bit of both. But maybe people won't mind so much if they get ice cream, you know, if their if their way of life has improved. Because he's not like, I don't think Lance is like trying to be a Genghis Khan or something.
No.
Going in and enslaving people.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what he wants, I don't think. And then Daryl and Carol say, well, you're not coming with us. And he says, I thought they were threatening to kill him, but I actually felt bad for him here.
Yeah.
Because he's like, what?
Wait, look at me. I cannot survive out here.
This thing. Yeah, that. But he's also like, come on, you guys. Don't you see that I'm actually trying to make a society that's worth living in? And I'm going to play this part because I thought it was
just to break my
Lance
heart
thing. Yeah. So here's Lance's pitch. I call it.
You should move before dawn. They will, but you won't.
Oh.
What? But you can't get there without me.
Yeah, we can.
How's that?
Just said there's a train.
We wait for it to come and then we see where it goes.
But you still need me. We talked about this. Not burning the Commonwealth down, creating a better future for the children, for everyone. I know you heard me.
Yeah, only because you wouldn't shut up.
I helped build the Commonwealth. Don't you see? Together we can make it better. A place where everyone can truly have a shot. I can see the campaign for it. Here, you aren't defined by who you were, but what you can become. It'll signal a new day has come, a new age where everyone, all of us, can start again.
Not everyone.
Not you.
He's addressing the complaints about the Commonwealth because the Commonwealth is a place that has good about it. I mean, I don't know how the viewers feel about that. They may just be like, no, forget that. Go back to Alexandria. But I know in the comic, Rick really held it up high. Like, this is a return to civility. And but there's clearly problems with it. And the main problem is that it's all rigged and you can't really advance. So that's exactly what he's addressing here. Everyone actually does have a shot. And I don't know if he actually believes that or if he just thinks that's what Carol and Daryl want to hear. I'd like to think he actually believes it, but I don't know.
I think he does. And I think the thing about the Commonwealth, and I don't think it's spoilery to say this because we've kind of passed this stage in the show, is that when you're introduced to the Commonwealth, you think there's going to be some really, really, really dark shit going on here, like Sanctuary, like Terminus, like Woodbury. And in the comics, at least, the reveal is sort of not really. Like, it is bad. It's stinky in terms of, like, you know, people are oppressed and things like that. But for example, like, the thing, if anything, they've made it darker in the show with Sebastian's behavior. But in the comics, certainly, it was just, it's society again. So it really showed up society's flaws and that those kind of imperfections. And I think in the, even with Sebastian, I mean, what Sebastian does is really terrible with the kind of indentured servitude of those people. You can imagine that happening not in the zombie apocalypse. Like, this is the thing, is like, it's sick, but it's not like the kind of stuff we've seen in like Terminus and things like that. So that's the thing with the Commonwealth. It shouldn't be thrown away because at the heart of it, you get healthcare, you get these things. It's about how do you manage that, the kind of radical communism of Alexandria where everyone does everything versus a capitalist society that has flaws. And
we've been asking, like, what can they do? Like Rima and I, when she guessed it, you know, we're like, I don't know, but something better. And this is kind of what Lance is trying to address here.
I'd love it if they used his phrase, if that gets called back in the final episode. It'd be like,
right,
he's a good spin doctor, so why not?
It does seem like that's where it's going, right? Yeah. If the Commonwealth is still going to be around, it's going to have to be something like what Lance is saying, if it looks anything like it does now. I mean, otherwise it could just be like communist or something, maybe socialist, I don't know.
Well, what he says there could not apply more fittingly to any characters in The Walking Dead than Carol and Daryl. What you were before doesn't define you. Because if what you were before defined you, Carol would be a cowering housewife and Daryl would be in juvie. Like, it's, you know what I mean? It's actually very much the way they live and the way that their societies have run. But it's tied up in, like, neoliberal trappings of this capitalist society. So it's harder to kind of swallow.
And I mean, where Lance... it's interesting because I think Lance wants the Commonwealth to be kind of like the United States or any Western country. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, no country has clean hands. There's been a lot of dirty shit done and continues to be done. And the question is, can you have a society like the Commonwealth or better, like what Lance is describing, without resorting to ruthless methods like Lance uses? And this is where he's gone wrong. Like, well, I mean, I was trying to think, where did he go wrong? He had weapons coming and they were ambushed and he blamed the wrong people and had them killed. That was just kind of a dumb mistake.
Yeah.
He tried to kill Aaron and Gabriel and Maggie. I mean, he just got really ruthless there.
He panicked and got really dumb.
I think it was like he got dumb, made a bad and ruthless mistake. And then when the people who were trying to get revenge on him for that, he just went full power mad mode and tried to have them killed. Mm-hmm. So that was a big fuck up. But other than that, I mean, then he had the janitors killed just to create zombie chaos. So it's like, once he got knocked off balance, he was a total fuck up.
Yeah, he was like, I'm just gonna keep digging and digging and digging more, and then I'm just gonna dig a little bit more because I don't know what to do.
But before that, there was that one sequence with where he took Carol out to make a trade for drugs, and I can't remember what that was, but it seemed kind of shady too. And other than that, I don't.
Well, it seems shady at the start, and I'm not excusing it, but he points out that they need it for the hospitals. So it's like, if we don't have people growing this opium, then we don't have anesthesia and painkillers, and you're sort of like, oh, it's not great. It's funny what you're saying about the American and kind of Western mythology, that he mentions trains, because trains are such a big part of how the West was won and how, you know, things getting from coast to coast, like the Great American Railroad. And now we're looking again at trains as being this kind of magic thing that suddenly makes
unifying
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that comes up in the comic as well, trains. So yeah, it's interesting
Absolutely.
To see it.
We'll talk about that when we do a comic talk, yeah. But also, I mean, like, something I just thought of that we do that, like you said, you know, you need this opium to make painkillers. Like, we need, right now at least, to work with China because our economies are tied together. Mm-hmm. But we're less and less approving of what they're doing in their country, mm-hmm. especially persecuting the Uyghurs, this group, mm-hmm. and more, you know, just bad human rights policies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we still work with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's so. We do all sorts of things there. Like big pharma is terrible, but we need those drugs and medicines to keep our society going. You know, there's a lot that we'll turn a blind eye to, and I include myself mm-hmm. in that. I think we all do. I think to live in this society, you have to. Like, you have to.
To use the products we use that aren't good for the planet. I mean, we could really go into it and make ourselves feel horrible. Yeah, I'm just trying to say, Lance, like, doing some things that don't seem that appealing, some of that seems like necessary evil, and then later on he just sort of went off the rails.
There will be a lot of listeners right now going, you guys go off on Negan all the time and you're totally like, Lance is cool. And I'm like, no, here's what it is, because I thought about this today, because I thought, am I a hypocrite? And for
me,
Lance hasn't crossed some of the lines that Negan crossed. And a lot of those are to do with treatment of women and sexual assault. And Lance hasn't done that. And to me, that is a marker. It's a line.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. I 100% agree with what you just said. And Lance is doing what he's doing because he thinks it's what's best for the most people. There's also him wanting to be power and get adulation. So that's mixed in there too, for sure. But Negan was doing stuff because he just seemed like he got off on it. Yeah. Like, I enjoy inflicting pain on you. I enjoy ironing the faces of the men whose girlfriends I'm sleeping with, you know, just getting his rocks off. And Lance doesn't seem to quite do that. But
Lance is more like the governor. It's a different kind of thing. Cause I think the governor's motivations were much more that way. In fact, we were talking about this when we were watching the episode, because, I think one of the things that isn't working about the Commonwealth for me is, like, it feels like it's only two streets big. Like, you're just not getting any sense of the scale of it when you're in it. And I think that's probably COVID stuff and whatever. But, Peter was like, oh, it seems like...
If only they had just one more neighborhood.
A distinctive, like, here's another place where we'll have scenes. We've spoken a bit about Woodbury, and I haven't thought about Woodbury in ages, but at the moment when you're inside it, the Commonwealth feels about the size of Woodbury, which I imagine was maybe 1,000 people, 2,000 even. I like that they keep reminding us that it's 50,000 people, because otherwise you would forget, because it just seems so small.
I mean, it was especially at first quite striking to see, like, they had mints and water, cooler and ice cream and record store and all that. But now that we've kind of gotten used to all the modern setting, then it's more about the size and scope of it that we're not really getting.
I suppose we saw a bit in the middle chunk with when they were clearing out the old apartment blocks and when they lived in the kind of shanty town bit where everyone's in those apartments and stuff. But it just doesn't feel very connected, I think. And I think that's, you know, it is what it is. It's not I would reckon it's probably a COVID thing and to do with how many people at a certain point they could have on set, but who knows?
They just keep showing that one block all the time.
Yeah, I know. They're like, Yumiko is like dramatically following this guy down the one street. And you're like, how did he spot her? Could it be because it's the one street? Like, yeah.
Yeah, totally. All right. What's your second point?
Well, I mentioned Yumiko's. So yeah, Yumiko's choice. Pamela went kind of full Bond villain in sort of setting up this situation that really didn't serve anyone in it particularly well. I think Pamela got a bit cocky and was like, hey, you'll turn your friend in to save your other friends without sort of... Yeah, I think that was kind of awkward. I don't think it was something that was ever going to work in Pamela's direction. And I think what we see of Yumiko in this episode, I thought Eleanor Matsuura was great. I thought she really sold every scene she was in. I particularly liked the scene with her and Lauren Ridloff signing to one another. Although it's a real pain in the ass to take notes when it's a signing. So you have to pause like every time.
I like how they had suspenseful music during it and it was so long. And I'm curious if any listeners know sign language.
Yeah.
Could you understand what they were saying? If there were no subtitles, was it pretty clear?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, right? I always watch that and I'm like, I really want to go back and learn sign language because it looks really cool.
Yeah, me too. I was starting to watch their hands a little bit and just trying to imagine, wow, what it would be like to understand something just visually like that. I guess we understand by reading, but anyway, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. And so seeing that scene and her with her brother at the hospital and a real kind of Katniss from the Hunger Games moment where she puts Tomi in the public eye so that nothing can happen to him, or at least if something happened to him, people will know about it. Like, that is next level crafty. I love that.
She said, here's our thoracic surgeon. He's irreplaceable, and let's give him a hand. And I'm like, it's a good thing he's not a baker still.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not.
He makes such great cakes. They're just the best.
There's someone in the audience like, my uncle died 3 years ago and you were making cakes? Like, yeah.
I know. They're like, weren't you the baker?
Screw you, Tomi. And he's like, oh no, I'm so sorry. I did put in my notes, like, so Tommy's just like a surgeon now? Like, no one's pissed that he was pretending to be a baker the whole time? I don't know. Maybe doctors get special treatment. I did laugh at the scene with her and Eugene in the prison, which was just the worst kind of secret chat ever, because like the stormtroopers were like right there, the common troopers, sorry. But I enjoyed Eugene saying that his friends being harmed was a beast of burden he couldn't deal with even for the truncated time he has left. So it was, I think, I turned around to Peter during that scene and I was like, do you think Josh McDermott's a good actor? Because I think he is. I think I feel this antipathy towards Eugene that is all to do with his character, nothing to do with the performance. I think Josh McDermott...
It'd be interesting to see him act if he was actually speaking like a human being and see if he could do it.
Yeah, I think he's I really think he's fantastic in that role. Yeah. I really like... I was watching it and I was like, I haven't appreciated this enough as the show's gone on. I've let my annoyance at Eugene cloud kind of my perception of that, and I'm like, do you know what, he's really, especially this last season or two, he's really brought a kind of pathos to it that I've appreciated. So seeing that scene with the two of them was just really lovely. And yeah, that
I think you have mentioned now and again, oh, that was a good one. So I feel like
I haven't just been like,
sort of been like, let me make a point to point out that sometimes, you know, because he's had some really moving stuff over the years.
Too. Yeah. And he plays, I've never actually seen Josh McDermott in anything else. To my mind, he's a comic. Is he not a stand up or something? Like, he doesn't.
He used to be a stand up a long time ago. But when we were doing Walker Stalker, I was like, oh, you should do some stand up at Walker Stalker. And he's like, well, my act is old and it takes a lot of work to come up with new stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, of course. Sorry. So you didn't do it.
Stand ups work crazy hard.
Yeah.
Like, I tried stand up for a bit and I'm like,
so
oh.
I think he moved past that. Oh, you did? Oh,
you have to repeat. You have to
send
like
me the YouTube video.
Oh, my God. the thing is, you have to, what put me off and what pushed me back towards improv is like, you have to do the same set again and again and again and again to make sure you're getting it right. And I was just like, I get bored and stressed out with this. I'd rather do something where I get to do
me too
new stuff every week.
I've thought about trying stand up, but what I think good comics do so well is they can make it feel like they're saying what they're saying for the first time.
Yes.
And for me, when I'm podcasting, my energy comes from my genuine enthusiasm. And if I'm repeating something and pretending, it's not genuine. And I don't think I could do it.
Yeah, hard same. I was like, this is difficult. And I always think it's interesting the way comedians transition into acting, because you bring different skills, I think, because comedy is a lot more about sort of thinking on your feet and being very in your head sometimes.
There are a lot of comics who've become really good actors, though. So
very
I think
so.
Really great comics, we're going way off here, but we're talking about Eugene, Josh McDermott. So I think really good comics, they have such an understanding of humanity because they know how to make people laugh, and that means they know how to move people. And also a lot of comedy comes from dark places, so I think a lot of comics can make that transition pretty well. Not all of them.
And I really felt, I am a little worried that Eugene might not make it out of this season. I don't know. I'm a little I don't know. I'm perturbed at the thought that he might not go, or he might not make it to the end. So, yeah. And I just, Tomi gives Miko some good advice where he says, you know, well, not good advice in the sense that she doesn't do it, you know, but he talks about giving Pamela what she wants. He talks about, you know, there isn't justice waiting around the corner. And that's kind of a very jaded view of the world. But I think one that's probably very true for the people who've been living in the Commonwealth for a long time. And it was really nice to see Connie briefly. And I loved the idea that she stabbed this guy and then followed him to hospital. It seemed very investigative journalist to me. It wasn't stab him and run away. It was right. Stab him, follow him, because then I'll find out where he lives.
Yeah. And it was good of Yumiko to say, well, let me do it because he doesn't know me.
Yeah.
And then she failed because she's not very good at following people without being seen. She's absolutely crap at
it. They didn't cover that at Harvard. They didn't do surveillance.
But it was kind of cool to have a failure like that. Like some the things that our heroes do don't always work out right.
100%. And talking about not asking permission to do something and sort of planning things together was just really lovely. And there was a nicely framed scene where Yumiko's walking down the hospital corridor, and it's just before she kind of finds slash sees Connie. And the way they framed it, it's a poster that should say Commonwealth Cares, but they've cut it off so it just says Wealth Cares. And I'm like, ooh, incisive political commentary about money. Because, you know, like we also see Pamela's little, I guess, group of like waspy investors in her office. So to have that kind of reminder.
Big pocket donors.
I mean, what are they donating? I don't know. I guess maybe they had money on
there's
them
an economy
still?
There. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's still an economy. I mean, it was interesting because when she was talking to those donors, she was saying, don't worry, we're not going to let any more immigrants in. I'm like, oh, that's topical.
Right.
But I started to feel myself trying to see it from their point of view. Like, they are wealthy people who want to have this safety. Nice community, and they're putting money into it to try and have it be the way they want, but they're also trying to cement their positions of power too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that's the way it goes.
Yep. Like, indeed. So that was my next point there.
I had a point on Yumiko too. Let's see. I think, you know, Pamela wants Yumiko to prosecute Eugene because that will look the best. If Eugene's friend says he's guilty, then clearly he is. And yeah. And I asked Penny, who used to be a lawyer, if in the real world a lawyer would be allowed to prosecute a friend like that. And she said,
nope. Too much conflict of interest. One of my favorite anecdotes about the law is that when Peter used to be a lawyer in Scotland, he once had to tell the judge that so when they come in the morning in Scotland, it's not very high tech. The jury gets picked because names get put in like a fishbowl and someone picks them out. And when Peter walked in that morning, he noticed my very good friend, Joanna, who also looked after our cat while we were on holiday, waiting in the jury queue. So he had to go and tell the judge that she could not be on the jury because she had babysat our cat the weekend. So I like to think that my cat really played part in the Scottish justice system that day. But yeah, they're big on conflict of interest and stuff. Hey, you can't defend someone if you know them or prosecute them if you know them, because you'll be biased one way or the other.
But as it's all a charade, as Yumiko says, it's a PR stunt, it's a kangaroo court. So then there's this public gathering where Yumiko readies herself to announce that she's prosecuting Eugene. And the whole time I'm like, yeah, right. She's not going to say what Pamela wants. And I'm like, that's a big risk for Pamela. Like, you're kind of risking the same thing that just happened a couple weeks ago. Remember when Max played that tape of Sebastian? It wasn't very smart. I mean, I guess she feels like she has a lot of leverage on Yumiko because she threatened his brother. And even that little thing that she did, having him stand up, there's no guarantee that's going to make any difference.
No. It's the best she could do with what she had, isn't it?
Right. And also, all her friends could die because of this. So Yumiko's taking a pretty big risk doing that.
She really, really is. It was ballsy as fuck. Really ballsy.
And I don't think she decided to turn against Pamela until she heard herself saying the words that I'm pretty sure someone else wrote for her. Governor Milton gave us the gift of a second chance, a chance to live lives we thought we were gone forever. For me, that meant being a lawyer again and the opportunity to uphold a sacred ideal of the old world, justice. And then later she says, and regardless of the personal cost, we must always seek justice if we're to preserve who we are as a people. And I'm like, whoever wrote that was pretty bold to think that she'd read those words and not flip. That was mm-hmm. a bad mistake if Pamela wrote that.
That was a lot. You know? A lot. And it's quite a trope, isn't it, for someone to be like delivering a talk and then realizing halfway through that they don't believe in what the talk says. But I loved it. I was like, this is great.
Yeah. Well, she was struggling with the whole thing. Like, Tomi advised her to do what Pamela wanted. Mm-hmm. Eugene gave her the okay to do what Pamela wanted. And so I think after those two encounters, she went in going, all right, I need to do this. So, yeah, it is a trope, but I thought it worked okay.
Yeah, I think so. I think she sold it. I like Eleanor Matsuura a lot, and yeah, I think she really sold that.
Okay, I'm going to do a point now since we both just talked about that one. So, let's see. How about, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Lance, because there was more than just that speech that he gave. First off, Daryl and Carol think he's going to know where their abducted friends are because, quote, he knows all the dark shit that goes on here. Kind of like that.
It's optimistic, isn't it?
I guess, yeah.
I guess when you're clutching at straws, you may as well clutch at Lance.
Yeah. Maybe they should have went to Mercer. I guess, well, Mercer's not been their friend lately. So they infiltrate the prison. They find Lance. That was a fucked up scene.
Oh, my God. Carol's face. She's just like, Jesus, what?
What the hell? He's all bloody, fiddling with his coin.
Oh, my God.
Saying over and over, there's always a way out. There's always a way out. Meanwhile, fucking zombie Sebastian writhing around in a pulpy, bloody mess of Roman Calhoun's body that Lance had to chop up.
It's one of those moments where I was like, if I was Carol, I'd be really tempted to just slide it shut and sort of walk away quietly and be like, you know what? Let's try Mercer. It's fine. I think Mercer is maybe more reasonable. Like, oh my God, what the fuck, Lance?
And then when Daryl went in and does, of course, what he always does, he killed the zombie. It happened to be Sebastian. I thought Lance might be like, no, I'm going to get in trouble. So, but he didn't even notice.
He's just like.
Then Carol threatens to kill him unless he tells where their friends are. He says he'll show them. They really should have said, you need to explain this fully or we'll start chopping off your fingers, dude.
Yeah.
But they have to save the surprise. So we'll find out hopefully next week.
Right.
What's
right.
What's going on? Then he has this radio frequency monitor on his foot. And I think that's just for a little action here. So you're going to have to cut off my foot. Are you ready to carry me? And so they're running down the prison hall and these troopers run around and fire automatic weapons directly at them, it seems like. So I think this is a deliberate reference to stormtroopers in Star Wars, right?
It has to be. Even the corridor was set up like a scene from the Death Star. It has to be.
I wanted R2-D2 to just come across the hallway or at least a zombie, like a short zombie.
To be fair, Tomi sounds a bit like C-3PO, so they could just have him walk in.
It could have been him. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Hello. Oh, no. I've come to the wrong place. That would be amazing.
Just an escape shuttle.
Oh my God. Amazing.
So then Lance, of course, takes Carol through this unstable, abandoned infrastructure project so they won't get caught. And I wondered, because he also said when they started to go, he goes, wait, I need to do something first. And I don't think we found out what that was.
Well, I thought it was probably go to the bathroom, but
Hold on a second.
I just need
piss
to
all over Sebastian.
I think he smashed Sebastian's head in after he'd presumably pissed on him, which, to be fair, he wouldn't. Because when Pamela finds him, his head's all mushed up and the coin is in the brains.
I think, because
I didn't catch it the first time around. Yes. I was like, is he just leave his coin? That's weird. He could have just left it down. But yeah, Sebastian's head is all fucked up, whereas Daryl just stabs him in the head.
So he stamped on his head and pissed on his head, and then he left his coin there.
Amazing. I'd love to watch that outtake. I think it would be really funny.
I saw the Blu-ray.
I like burst out laughing at you're going to have to cut off my foot. I was like, Lance, don't be a little bitch. That's what I've written in my notes. I was like, no, just cut the monitor off, you idiot. He's like, you're going to have to cut my foot
off.
It's hard
to cut those things off.
Honestly,
so
men.
Then I in my head later was like, did he call the troops and tell them to show up on the other side of this structure that they were in?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, now that you said that, it cements it for me. That's what he was doing. So anyway, I think they were going to kill him too. Mm-hmm. But, and also like, it seemed like, oh, did he bring her into this zombie infested area on purpose to trap her? But he wouldn't do that because it's too much of a risk for himself. And he was the first one that got grabbed. So why would he think that he could get out of that and not Carol?
I got the feeling he was just like fucking making it up as he went along. I don't think, because he was saying like,
but he was taking them to the train that goes to where their friends are, apparently. I think so. So if he was going to take him somewhere else and try to trap him, then he shouldn't go anywhere near any of that.
But I will say, when he had the chance to sort of escape and leave Carol behind, I think he would have taken it. Like that moment where he kind of comes back and he's like, I thought you were right behind me. I was a bit like, yeah, did you?
That's true. I mean, I think at that moment, yeah, he wasn't helping because he thought, okay, well, if this zombie takes care of her for me, I guess that'll be good.
Yeah.
But, then yeah, so but I when they go in there, he smells something bad, and I'm like, that's unusual, but people should have that reaction more on this show.
It was probably himself rotting. Look at him. It was rank.
And then, smells his own armpit. Yeah. And then when it was too dark, I was like, did they bite him? What's happening right now? When the zombies started grabbing at him.
But I think
then
he
when Carol
to kick
pulled
them,
off
yeah.
one of their faces, that was so
brilliant.
Cool.
Oh, it was so good looking.
I mean, it was the second week in a row somebody pulled a zombie face off, but it just so looked so great. And Lance is just hanging back watching. Then the four soldiers ambush them, and they do something that nobody would ever do. They say on the radio, basically, okay, we're about to kill these people. Yeah. Just fucking kill them.
And here's what you'll say. When you say, you'll say that we found them, yeah, but then they didn't agree, so that's why we killed them. I'm like, you could have just killed them in the time it took you to
kill them first, then tell him that.
Absolutely.
So anyway, Daryl to the rescue, and what else? Then Carol knifes one of the soldiers in the head who's still writhing around. It's still shocking to me to see people knife non-zombies in the head, but they were going to kill them, so.
I really, one day I would like to, no, hang on, I'm going to try and phrase this better. I would like to try knifing the skull of something just to see if knives go in that easily, because I'm really intrigued about it.
Yeah, I mean, listeners, any volunteers?
I'm just thinking, if I ever get, like,
Lucy
framed
will fly
for
you
murder,
out to the UK.
I will, I'll fly you out. It'll be like
It'll
that
be a
German
one-way
guy.
Ticket.
Yeah, the German guy who wanted to try eating someone. If anyone wants to be stabbed in the head, just hit me up.
Just so we could see. We might need two or three people.
Yeah,
just
we'll
so
draw up some contracts and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it's very confusing.
Email talk at podcastica.com.
Email head at podcastica.com. I can see if it's going in the side, I can buy it a bit more. But the top, I mean, you're anyway.
It's ridiculous. Anyway. No way. So then they tell Lance he's not going with them, and they give him a chance to run, and he goes, "I won't make it out of here." And Carol's like, "You're smart. You're a smart guy, Lance. You might survive." I like that line. And then when he tried to shoot them, that was a super dumb move.
That was
so dumb.
That was the dumbest
thing
he's ever
done. Get away.
100%. Because he could have run to that outpost and wormed his way into something. Like, yeah, that was really dumb.
Yeah, that was dumb.
And that but he was desperate. He was.
I guess so. But he should have just left. I mean, there was no good reason, I don't think, to try that. Because if he'd killed them, then so what? How would that improve his lot in life? He's still out in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it wasn't worth the risk, in my opinion. Just get out. I mean, unless he just thought they were about to kill him, that would be the only. But they weren't. They just basically were saying, get the fuck out of here, dude.
Yeah. I thought they started off wanting to kill him and then kind of relented a little bit. I don't know. But yeah, the upshot was they weren't going to do it at that point.
No, I don't think so. They said, you're not coming with us. And it seemed like, but then I think my opinion is they never intended to kill him. They were just like, okay, we don't want you here anymore.
Did, would you think we'll see him as a walker?
Oh, yeah, maybe. So you'll get one more episode.
That'd be great.
Lance. You'll be like Pamela Milton. No, but the zombie died.
I know. I'll be like, feed my friend, Jason.
There's one more little thing. I was a bit confused at first why Daryl and Carol think that they're going to be able to find wherever this train is going when Lance had just said there's a couple forks along the way, but I know the way. But I think what Lance intended to do was to take a train that was already there and take it where he knows. But it's a supply train, they said, because we see our people in a bus going presumably to the same place, not a train. But this is a supply train. So I think what Daryl and Carol intend to do is wait for the next train to come in and then leave and then stow away on it.
Yeah,
and
I
it will
so.
Go where it's supposed to go. Right. And
then
if they need to go off, like once they get to their stop and then go to another place, they'll just follow the supplies to wherever they're going to go.
It's a logical, you know, it's the biggest lead they've got. I was on the same page for pretty much all of that. I did like the line where they're sort of like chiding him for not keeping up or something, and he's like, I was just locked in a cell and forced to feed my colleague to Pamela's rotor, son. I might not be moving at full speed here. I'm like, you stand up for yourself, son.
Yeah.
I do think he really does have a bit of a boner for Carol. I think Carol is of the same cloth as Pamela. I think he does genuinely like think quite a lot of her.
And well, I'm probably again biased by what Angela Kang said at the end, but he wants Carol to like him too, and he thinks that Carol should appreciate that he's clever like her or whatever.
Yeah, he envies the genuine close connections that the group have. He doesn't have that in his life. Like, you know, he doesn't know how to empathize with Carol and Daryl's friendship because he's never known that. And I liked that they got the line in about him being her chauffeur's son. I was like, that's some good backstory that they're fitting into the script there. Hell yeah.
Line about what?
He said something about doing anything for Pamela, making her see that he wasn't just her chauffeur's son.
Which is a little bit
backstory we got in our interview.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
I'm just having a look. I've written sneaky, slimy Lance for the under in the dark scene. He really fucked up by telling them about the train. That's twice he's fucked up in the space of as many kind of days, because Sebastian died when he didn't intend him to, and he told them about the train, which was his only leverage. And the other thing I would say is that the horror movie angles throughout, like this episode in particular, Aisha Tyler did a great job with making it kind of, I don't know, uncanny, edgy, the way that things were framed, the way that things were being shot from below or above and in the dark was just very tense. And I really enjoyed that as a viewer.
Well done.
Yeah, very much. Well done.
Yeah. And they mentioned too in the back part that she has directed episodes of, I think, all of the spinoffs.
Yeah, she did World Beyond. She did the other show that we don't speak about. And now main show.
I don't know about Tales, but yeah.
Yeah, she wouldn't have done Tales yet, but yeah.
That's all right, cool. What's your next one?
I have 2 points left, so I'll talk first of all about the bigger picture, just kind of where we're at the end of this episode. So the Commonwealth have taken everyone. Daryl says they even took Dog. So we've had a Dog update. Dog did leave Leah and come back with them. How? We don't know, but he did.
I don't know. And I missed that he had said before that they got the kids, so I thought that he only mentioned Dog. Where's your priorities, man?
I'm doing such a good job as a father to my dog. Where's Judith? Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Judith's gone.
Do you think Dog is... yeah, those guys. They're not mine. No, just kidding. That's horrible. Do you think Dog's going to France?
Oh, I don't know. Un chien dans la France. Surely not. Maybe Judith will get to keep Dog.
Yeah, I feel like Dog may not be going to France.
Oh, Dog.
Poor Dog.
And at the end, we see a prison bus with a lot of drugged people with bags over their heads. We can assume these are our people, but we see a very cool shot that goes in through the mask where we see that it's Ezekiel, who of course showed up at the very start of the episode very briefly. So we know that they're all together and that they're getting taken somewhere. So where, we don't know. And that's quite
It's the title
scary.
Of next week's episode, which I won't say in case it's
France.
Yeah, it's called France.
It's called A Day in Paris.
All right. Well, my next one is the abductions. So Ezekiel comes to visit Carol at the bakery and she says, "Didn't we already say goodbye?" Which I thought was kind of fun because we all thought, oh, that was probably their goodbye. And so it was kind of a nod to the audience when they said goodbye last time. But then she's talking to him and turns and he's suddenly gone. And my first thought was, is she back on Adderall? Like, is she?
I thought she was hallucinating for a minute. I was like, is this a dream? What's happening?
But it was, you hear a little commotion and they've grabbed him silently somehow, even though she just knew him by his footsteps. They can grab him silently, whatever.
Yeah.
and then they come for her and she hits them with bread or something and gets away. Pretty awesome. So then she goes to Daryl and sees his motorcycle and some blood on the ground. And I loved how they approached this scene where there's abductions happening all around. So we see his in progress. We don't get to see that he killed this other guy. And we see also that he's losing. This guy's choking him out.
Yeah, it was pretty close there.
Pretty striking. Yeah, you're not used to seeing Daryl in a position like that. I don't know. I still think there's a chance he could have gotten out of it without Carol because that zombie was coming. And if the zombie bit the other guy first or something, you know, or he could have somehow beat him, but it looked like there was a chance he wasn't going to make it out without Carol.
Yeah. He definitely wouldn't have been like, it's okay, Carol. I got this. Like he definitely wasn't at that stage.
And then Daryl knifes them both. And again, it's pretty shocking to see him knife a guy who's, I mean, he was probably going to be a zombie given that he just got bitten. And then I was thinking, who do we know for sure are taken? We know Rosita. Mm-hmm. The others mentioned Magna, Dog, the kids, Connie, Kelly, Ezekiel. I don't know who else is left.
I assume Negan and Annie.
Negan and Annie, you think? Yeah. I don't know.
Who else is?
I don't know about that.
Who came back with
Jerry, maybe?
Yeah, Jerry. No, Jerry's with Aaron.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So that might be all of them.
I think that must be it. Yeah.
And I was thinking,
do they take Coco? Oh, Gabriel.
Gabriel, yeah.
And
I bet you he's.
Would they take Coco? She's very little.
What are they going to do with her?
I don't know.
I don't know. Put her in foster care. That's so sad. Don't
bleak.
Laugh at that. So my last point about abduction is, okay, why abduct people? Well, first off, it's leverage with Yumiko because Pamela tells her if she doesn't prosecute Eugene, then she won't be reunited with her friends. So maybe that's why you would abduct these people and not just kill them as leverage. But as Mark brought up on the instant reaction, this is probably also connected to our as yet unsolved mystery of all these people who have disappeared.
Right? We don't know who. Yeah.
And Milton even says, I saw in Second Watch, your friends have been removed from the Commonwealth. And Yumiko says, what, like the hundreds of others you've had disappeared. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what we're going to find out next week. That's why I feel like the plot is really progressing, because now I think we're going to find out finally what was teased at the very beginning of the storyline, all these people who disappeared and were on this list, you know?
That would make sense.
That's all about. That's kind of cool.
Mm.
Okay. What else?
Foster care is not funny. I wasn't laughing at foster care. I was just laughing at the idea of the Commonwealth having a social service system. I was like, who would you even put in
it's
it? Like, everyone's
hilarious.
A terrible parent. Carol and Daryl, number one. I don't have much. I mean, they're number one, but I don't have much to say. Just that it was nice to see the montage be about their friendship more than kind of either of them individually. Took us right back to the barn with both of them with their kind of matching haircuts in retrospect. having a little moment outside the barn there. Carol's just such a consummate survivor, like running away and running interference from the goons. She just knows what to do. I thought the goon fight with Daryl was great again. It was so simple, but just that change in stakes of having the other guy turn halfway through was just excellent.
Pretty cool. And that guy, I was like, was that the fastest we've ever seen a zombie turn? Because of course people turn into zombies at whatever rate would be the most dramatic for the story. But
Shane was quick.
That's true, right? He was almost immediate. Good point. But I was thinking there was also Beta when he killed those Alexandrians and then meditated for a little while until they came back to life.
I had a theory for ages that it was about how angry you were when you die. Like, it's like if you die when you're in like a fit of rage, you'll come back quicker. But it's never really been proven by anything other than Shane came back quickly.
I mean, clearly it's just what they need for the story. You know?
Yeah, because Sebastian took ages.
Yeah.
Maybe it's testosterone.
And Carl, I mean, he wasn't.
Oh, God. Carl was about, what, 3 weeks? Carl took, what, 2 seasons? Something like that? Yeah, that was it, really. I think Carol and Daryl both look really cool in their Jeep driving off together. But I will say, this made me a little bit sad that we're not getting Carol in the Daryl Dixon spinoff. I was a bit like, am I going to enjoy this as much without the two of them? Because I think it's their unique sexless chemistry that I think makes it really enjoyable to watch. Like, I really like that.
It's unique. It's very
unique. I can't think of many other relationships like it on TV. And it did make me for a moment be like, oh, I wish the spinoff was happening as it had originally intended to.
Right. That would There's be awesome. This podcast that it's kind of similar.
Yeah. Where I just grunt while Jason makes cookies. It's great. It's great. Recommend it.
I like how you cast yourself as Daryl.
I did. I was like, subvert the expectations. Although there are moments where Carol like 100% reminds me of my mother, which is not great. I turned around to Peter and I was like, do you think my mom would go full Carol in the zombie apocalypse? He was like, oh yeah, she's like halfway there now. And I'm like, jeez. But like when she's like, because you wouldn't shut up, I was like, this is literally my childhood right there. Like, love you, mom, if you're listening.
So that was, you just went through your notes, right?
No, those are my Carol and Daryl points.
Oh, Carol and Daryl. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, I have some random things about Pamela Milton.
Great.
Maybe we've already talked. Well, I mean, when one of those donors or upper crust, whatever, was saying they were sorry about her son and to lose a child is unthinkable. And she says, worse than death. Yes, but Sebastian will always be with me. I'm like, yeah, she's just like the governor, the other governor. And then that was confirmed when she was so upset to see that he'd been put down, which is an interesting scene. And then she sees Lance's coin in the pulp of what's left of Sebastian's body. I go, Lance. And I'm like, you won't have him to kick around anymore.
Yeah, I know. Who's she going to beat up now? She even misses Max. She calls her new assistant Max. And it's like,
oh. It's fine. On last week's Instant Reaction, I think it was Megan who was saying she can't stand Pamela's hair.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I paid attention this time, and I think it's cool. I mean, it fits her character. It's a nice style. I don't mind it at all. It's not like the garbage queen's hair, Jadis.
No, that's very true. That's very true.
The worst.
It's I'm in between you and Megan. I don't think it's the best hair, but I don't think it's the worst hair either. I think Jadis wins worst hair.
Don't you think it's fitting for her character?
It very much fits her character. I think in the comics they make her a bit more softer around the edges.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, I think this really suits her kind of fierceness, the way that she conducts herself and how she dresses and things.
Yeah, I agree. And then last thing on Pamela, I was asking myself, why is she still in power? Because everyone hated Sebastian, and then Eugene killed Sebastian, and now she wants to feed Eugene to the masses, you know, sort of metaphorically, to have him take the fall for it. But why do they care? I mean, they hated him. It seems like they'd hold him up as a hero almost, you know?
I guess no alternative. Until someone comes up and says, I want to rule as well, they don't really have a choice.
It's just, upset, rioting, and now things seem
it's weird. It's gone weird. Like the Commonwealth do come off a bit docile in all this. They're like, okay, that's fine.
I mean, except for when they were rioting and about to tear the whole place down. So it feels like a little jarring to me. Like,
but then Sebastian died, so everyone's chill again. They're just like, okay, that's fine.
I guess so. All right, I had one more point. Do you have any other?
I just have notes, so go for it.
Just the voiceover, you kind of already mentioned it, but and maybe I've already kind of said this before, but it really crystallized for me that these voiceovers are doing some great things. One, they're finding a way to show us some iconic scenes from Walking Dead history, which is really nice as the show wraps
up.
You know, it's so nice. They also remind us of where particular characters have been that are going to feature in this episode. This time it was Daryl and Carol. I think it was Eugene last time. And they focus on a theme of The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead has some really strong themes. This time it's about dealing with people and how they're more dangerous than the dead, but we also need each other. So you have to find that balance and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite part was when she said, we all need people we can count on. And that's not just about words, but action. And they show Carol blowing up Terminus.
Yeah.
It's a good example of some
her
action
best
there.
Moment.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's all I had to say about that. What about notes?
Nothing much. The common troopers are such bad shots that I think you're right. It has to be a Star Wars yeah. reference at this point. We spoke about the skin peel zombie, which was wonderful. Yeah. We learned that Yumiko's surname is Okamura, which is nice.
Oh,
I think we might have learned that when they were getting taken in, but I'd forgotten if we did.
Yeah, me too.
And I spent a really long time after the Sebastian scene wondering if zombies poop. Literally, I don't know. I was just like, well, eaten a lot. Like,
yeah,
Peter thinks they just eat and eat till they explode, but I don't think that can be right because then they die pretty quick. So maybe they're just very carbon neutral and they just, because they're walking all the time, they burn it all off.
They're not possible. They're like perpetual motion machines. They can't have a digestive system that actually works.
But I remember, I think the first time it really bugged me was just after Laurie had died and Rick found that zombie in the basement of the prison. And I think we were meant to assume it had eaten Laurie and it basically looked very pregnant.
Yes.
And Rick went like trawling through the guts to, I don't know, see if he could find Laurie. I don't know. But I was a bit like, wouldn't all zombies look like that after a big one? So yeah, I spent a lot of time thinking about zombie poop in this episode. So sorry, Sebastian / Teo Rapp Olsen, your performance was great, but I did spend a lot of time wondering if you'd pooped. So that was me.
If he's a decent person at all, he will chuckle at that and enjoy that you said it.
And hopefully send us a voice note to tell us if he does poop.
Do you poop? Okay, my notes. There was no more extra blood on the Walking Dead title in the title sequence this time. That's
no
weird.
Blood on the L.
Why? Yeah.
I know.
Why,
we want more
why
blood.
Would you not add more blood? Why add? It bothers me, my OCD side.
You're like, no, why? This isn't right. My brain is itchy.
Wait, maybe they forgot. Someone needs to have their pay docked. Okay, then Carol, after she suggests we need to go talk to Lance, says to Daryl, yeah, but it's not going to be easy. And Daryl said, when is it ever? And I kind of like that line. It reminded me of Return of the Jedi on Tatooine when Han is blinded and about to be thrown into the Sarlacc pit. And he goes, how are we doing? And Luke goes, how are we doing? And Luke goes, the same as always. That bad, huh? It's just these people who've been in all these adventures, you know.
Excellent. Yes, I like that parallel a lot.
All right. I think that's good. We will take a little break. There's a bit more to come. Stay with us.
Every night in my dreams, I see you. I feel you. That is how I know you. Far across the distance and spaces between us, you have come to show you. Go on. Near, far, wherever.
Threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people he kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
So, as I mentioned at the top, Entertainment Weekly has an article about Josh Hamilton. It was entitled Josh Hamilton's Fly Was Down for His Biggest Walking Dead Scene. That's how they got people to read it.
I cracked up. I was like, this is the best headline in
so
the world. Someone frame it for me.
It's pretty cool. So I'm going to read the whole thing because I thought it was pretty good.
Excellent.
Say, tell me about when and how you found out about Lance's fate. He says, when we were shooting in Georgia, I had to rent my own apartment and my lease was going to be up after a certain date. And I had to ask. I kept bugging production saying, hey, I know you might not know exactly, but should I do another month on my lease? And they were like, oh, no, you'll be done by this date.
Aww.
I was like, oh, okay. So that was the first heads up because I was like, that seems a little early. But then I got the final script, so it wasn't out of the blue. Aww. They say, what was it like shooting the death scene? He goes, there was the technical stuff and there was the emotional stuff of feeling so betrayed by Carol. I think he really thinks that they have this connection and a mutual grudging respect, even though he knows Carol doesn't trust him. But he's always hoping and he's always trying to think that there must be a way to fix this. It's always a way out.
Always a way out.
And so when she really just sends him off on his own, I think the betrayal, especially coming right after what happened with Pamela and in the cell, he just has a sort of lizard brain reaction like, well, fuck it. And that's why he grabs the gun. I don't think he even has time to think about it. It just happens so fast and his mind is geared towards trying to have the upper hand in any situation. There wasn't even time to register that she had shot him.
Hmm.
Well, that was dumb. Well. And then the technical thing of it was just trying to keep blood in my mouth in that last shot and trying to figure out when to let it out of my mouth without swallowing it. And it was the end of the night. It was the last shot. We had like 10 minutes to get that whole thing with the crane and the camera floating up. And so we only had one chance at it. It was just one of those things where we're like, are we going to get it? Are we going to get it? And when we finally got it, it was like, yeah. And they ran off because they had to pull the plug at the end of the night. And then I realized that my fly had been down for that shot. First, I was like, oh, no, my fly is down. And they're like, we'll fix it in post. And I was like, you know what? Don't. It's actually the perfect insult to injury to Lance for someone who was so fastidious about his appearance.
He's so right.
That's so funny.
It's so good.
They say, that's amazing. And I was wondering why he reaches for the gun, because it doesn't seem like a very smart move. He knows those two are killers. He says, I don't think it's well thought out. I mean, Lance has had a tough couple of days. Mm-hmm. He's not at the top of his game strategically. It was a choice with not a lot of thought put into it. It was totally instinctive. They say, Lance was such a complicated guy, and we always hear how every villain is the hero of his own story. But Lance in particular seemed like someone who believed he was on some sort of really important mission. What was your take on him? He says, when I first started, I was a little intimidated by how charismatic and twisted and extreme the villains had been up to this point. And I was like, is Lance going to be an interesting villain for anyone? He's not wearing anyone's skins on his faces. Yes. He doesn't have his dead daughter tied up in a back room. He's not Negan, who's the most charming villain of all time. But the more I thought about it, he actually is the kind of dangerous person in society that you actually see much more often.
Mm-hmm.
The way I saw him is that he was the manifestation of what he thinks he needs to do in a capitalist society, which is just connive and try to get to the top and try to work everything. And that means often doing terrible things and breaking lots of eggs to make an omelet. But I do think that he is sincere in his goals, which is what you say. Every villain's the hero of his own story. I don't think he was mustache twirling and cynical. I think he actually really did believe in his mission. Those are the people in society who scare me. The people who scare me most in society are people who believe very strongly in their vision of the world, even though it might be fairly reprehensible. Interesting. He kind of said the same thing to us when we had
the exclusive. So
he was practicing for the Entertainment Weekly. They say when Lance is trying to save himself there at the end and answer for his misdeeds, he says, that's not who I am anymore. That guy died back in that cell. Is that true? Or does he at least believe that to be true? He says he might think that that's true in that moment. I think that was an incredibly traumatic experience.
Yeah.
And I do feel like he thinks he was changed by it. He's someone who I don't think has gotten his hands that dirty in that way because he's been fairly protected in the Commonwealth. But has he changed? I don't know. I mean, the fact that he leaves that one last little fuck you with a coin for Pamela to find, I don't think he's repentant.
No.
But I do think, you know, not for her, but I do think he can imagine that if he's just resentful of her.
Yeah.
For not realizing what great contribution he's made. Mm-hmm. But I do think he can imagine that if Carol and Daryl let him join whatever would come in the future, I think he's desperate and he's trying to convince them and convince himself too. I think he wants to be a better person.
Aww.
They say, I'm not sure what your final scene of filming was, but what was your final day of shooting like? He says, it was that crane scene. It was emotional. I guess there's a tradition on the show where some people come to the set on your death day, and Josh McDermott came, and it was such a nice supportive thing.
Aww.
It was a night shoot, and it was sort of emotional, and it was sticky. Sticky and emotional.
Fake blood is really fucking sticky. I will tell you that for nothing. Yeah, it's very sticky.
How do you know?
I was once in a play when I was at uni, and I played the main role, and I had to kill someone, and we had a lot of fake blood, but it was mint flavored. So there's quite a funny picture of us backstage, like licking the knives because we were bored. It was, it was the Oresteia. It was a classical play, but yeah, we used a lot of fake blood. I assume the blood they're using is much better than the stuff we used, which came from the joke shop. But it was very sticky and stained quite a lot of my clothing. Sure.
It looks great. The blood they're using looks really good.
Oh, very viscous. That was
on his face, and last episode on Sebastian's face. Look cool. All right. Last question. They said, can we talk about the haircut? I've taken to calling it the Lance. How did you guys come up with the haircut? Do you miss the haircut? Are you going back to the haircut? He says, you know, my hair is all cowlicks anyway. So whenever somebody takes the time to keep it all in place, it's sort of a miracle. I'm not used to having it, which helped get into the character because it's very much not me. I don't think I even own a comb.
Aww.
We can attest to that because that was the one thing that kind of shocked me when because we did our interview over Zoom and his hair was all just kind of
much longer out there. Than expected. Longer. Yeah. It was nice. Was he wearing a hat? No, he wasn't wearing a hat.
Nicer than Lance.
Yes, it made him look very friendly. Very friendly indeed.
So that was that. I thought that was pretty good.
It was a great interview. I loved that. I was like, I said to Peter, can you Google Lance Hornsby fly? And he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, Google it. He's like, okay, admittedly, that's quite funny. I was like,
That's funny. If you went to the images page, you might find something else. I don't know.
This just leads directly to your blog, Lucy. I'm like, what? No, the other one.
The other one, the second result. And then the second and last news item, Sci-Fi Wire talked to some of the cast members and asked them to pitch their own Walking Dead spinoff projects.
Ooh.
Josh Hamilton says, I'll come back, but only if it's a 3-camera sitcom. I want it to be called Lance with an exclamation point.
We would cover that.
we would have to. Ross Marquand said, I would just want to be nothing but maces. It'll be called The Two Maces. Seth Gilliam says, I love how you guys are coming back with your own show. You're not including anybody else. And Josh said, I'm sick of this ensemble stuff. And then Seth said, I'd like to reprise the role of Father Gabriel at some point if I could do it with a French accent. You know that disease where people wake up one day and they speak a different language? I'd like him to take like a blow to the head, come to, and have this deep French accent. That would be really fun to play.
Excellent. They should. I would love that. I would also love a Father Gabriel like evangelical call-in show, you know, like where he has to answer call-ins from people or like be in front of a studio audience. I think that would be amazing. Only it's the zombie apocalypse. So
I mean, Father Gabriel, it seems like halfway through, he'd just be like, fuck you.
What? God's not talking to me today. Go away. Like, okay. Thanks, Gabe. Like.
And then Eleanor Matsura, who plays Yumiko, said, if our characters should make it to the end, we're all grouping off and starting our own Walking Dead Hawaii season. It's going to be new storylines. It's going to be just like hanging out on the beach. Stay tuned.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. In fact, you and Karen pitched that, did you not?
Yes, we did. When we heard about a new Walking Dead spinoff, which became Fear, but we didn't know the title or the premise or anything, we joked that it would be Walking Dead Hawaii. And then Kirk Manley, just unprompted, drew a Walking Dead Hawaii poster with all these zombies and this hot dude and hot chick, like
amazing
sunbathing with the Zeds in the background and the whole Hawaiian background. So cool.
I think you should pitch it. I think you should pitch it. Absolutely.
I wanted to send this to Eleanor Matsura on Twitter, but she doesn't have a Twitter.
Oh,
so,
bummer.
I'm going to sound so out of it here, but can you send stuff on Instagram that everyone can see, or do you have to DM it?
Oh, good question.
You can't really send something on Instagram where everyone...
Yeah, because you can only comment on Insta, I think. So yeah, I think you'd have to DM it. Or you could post it and tag her, but I don't know if she would look.
Post and tag her. Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah.
I think she would get a kick out of it. Okay, that's our show, episode 485. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for helping me at this difficult time.
If you are wondering why we didn't have a listener feedback segment, then that means you didn't listen to the beginning of the show.
Yep.
I said that we're not going to have it this time. We're doing it next in a few days here because we got so much feedback. So we're just going to, for the next few episodes at least, dedicate a special episode just for your feedback. So keep sending stuff in. And if you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows, not least of all because there's been a few finales and a few premieres in the last couple of weeks. I think House of the Dragon just wrapped up, She-Hulk wrapped up.
That's right.
But some other stuff starting.
We had so many podcasts this spring and summer, more than ever, like 20 almost.
That's amazing.
Our shows that we're covering anyway. And now it's winding down a little bit, which is good for everyone involved, I think, to not have such a glut of stuff from us. But House of the Dragon just wrapped for season one, and I'm sure their episode will be out in a day or two, a couple of days. And we just started our Dead to Me coverage. So we did the first five episodes in one, like, 2.5 hour podcast. And that show, if you haven't seen it, it's really good. The acting is great. It's about grief and loss, but somehow leaves you feeling in a better mood. And it's very dry humor. And I recommend
if
you've lost someone in your life and you just don't want to go there right now, then I maybe don't watch it. But it can also be cathartic for people I know. That's what I've heard. So this episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Karen Medeiros, who pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonGabassi. So thank you to Karen.
Love Karens, and we love you, Karen.
Yeah. Let's take back the Karen.
Let's reclaim the Karen.
That's right. All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit,
David Fox.
Always a way out. Always a way out. Always a way out.